Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
I'm John Batchelor with my colleague, Anatole Lieben of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. He's the director of the Eurasia Program. NATO. Right now, NATO is a question mark into the future. There are decisions being made, and there are remarks, and the remarks are in the news, so I'll stay with those. For example, the Chancellor-to-be of Germany, Friedrich Merz, has indicated that he'll go along with an idea to avoid the debt brake and spend perhaps $1 trillion on infrastructure and defense building over these next years of his chancellorship and beyond. That is extraordinary for Germany to come forward to commit to that. It tells everyone in Europe, spend money because we need a defense industry, and Germany's taking the lead. There's another example going in another direction. The leadership in Warsaw, Poland, is inquiring about a nuclear weapon that it can buy. It takes too long to develop it internally. They want to buy nuclear weapons, pointing to Belarus. Hey, they've got nukes deployed over there, and nobody objected when Russia did it, so why are you objecting when we want them? There you have it, Anatole. Two parts of what used to be NATO. Poland wants nukes, and Germany wants to lead by reindustrializing at the defense base. Which way are they going to go?
Well, I mean, I certainly think that there is going to be European rearmament. They can't do that very quickly because, you know, their base has decayed to such an extent. So this will be a long-term project. And, you know, the real question is what else will be cut? Because Merz is, you know, talking about infrastructure, because this has been a huge issue in Germany, the extent to which the railways, you know, the electricity grid, so many things have been allowed to decay. And if he simply said, we're going to, you know, spend a huge amount on the military, I think there will be a major public backlash in Germany. But the other thing is, you see, that the problem with European defense has only partly ever been about money. It's also been so much about cooperation and pooling, industrial production. Well, the problem about that is, of course, that, you know, if you pool it, some countries will make tanks and others who currently make tanks will not. Some countries will make fighter aircraft, others will not. You know, if Europe chooses to build German tanks, it won't build French Leclercs, you know, or British tanks. So, these are appallingly difficult, you know, political issues. So this cannot be done quickly. As far as the Poles and the nuclear deterrent is concerned, I mean, what I hope is that, you know, like any limitations on Ukrainian arms, this can become part of a wider process of European arms reduction talks, in which we can get back to a new version of the Conventional Forces in Europe agreement and of the intermediate missiles agreement, both of which eventually collapsed with fault on both sides. Because if so, that would also, you know, be a way, without surrendering to Russian demands, of going some way to meet Russian hopes of a new security architecture in Europe, in which Russia would be fully involved.
To London, the Prime Minister has indicated right now increasing defense budget from 2.55, I believe, to 2.35, something under 2.5 to 2.5. Sorry, I don't have the number in front of me.
Yeah, 2.3 to 2.5, yep.
Thank you very much. And there is doubt they can find the money, and so they're in a a feud with their own Labour Party about where to find the money. The larger question is, does the Prime Minister at this point have the authority to join with Germany in this lead of this new architecture? Is London to be looked to as a leader in post-NATO world?
Well, I mean, Britain has to be part of any autonomous European defence simply because, you know, it has the largest navy and not so much, not the largest army, but an army that will actually fight is the thing, even though there are very few of them. But the overwhelming majority of Britain's weapons come from America, which directly contradicts, you know, the desire to build up European military industries. The other thing you see is that as far as the left in Britain is concerned, but actually the populist right as well, you know, this government came in basically demanding austerity, you know, and there were all sorts of very small but very unpopular cuts, you know, to pensioners' winter fuel allowances and so forth, very unpopular on the left of the Labour Party. Now, you know, we're being told that Britain can generate huge amounts of money for the military. That doesn't go down well. And also, I mean, specifically, the way that this initial rise, which if, you know, if he's going to fulfill all his promises, won't nearly be enough. He's doing it by eliminating most of British international aid, which, of course, was also a favourite thing of the Labour left. So there are, you know, the question of where to find the money for this huge rearmament is going to be a very, very acute one.
Is the public with him on this? We have 30 seconds.
So far, to a degree, yes, but this is, you know, also the result of really whipped up paranoia about Russia. And if, in fact, there is a peace settlement in Ukraine, you know, which doesn't involve Ukrainian surrender, it will be very difficult to keep that level of paranoia going.
Anatole Levin is the director of the Eurasia Program at the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.